There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 57. Going to recap news as usual. Got some more prospects to talk about. Shocker. Shocker, everybody. We'll talk about some more injuries. Shocker there as well. Talk about our weekly weekend game and see how that's going scoreboard-wise. And picks for the weekend, as that'll be fun. As usual, another awesome Bloom board to discuss, your guys' listener questions, and much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDEntric, podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host is always on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're in mourning tonight. We're in mourning, Bubba. All good things must come to an end.
Is it because he gave up three runs?
Not talking about the show or anything like that, but yeah, the 29 2/3 scoreless inning streak of Mr. Nate Eovaldi died a quick death tonight. Still outpitched Spencer Strider.
Yes, I take that as a plus.
But yeah, so hate to see him give up a couple runs, but I'm just getting greedy at this point.
Yeah, it's really, really greedy against one of the best offenses in baseball. I'd take that seven innings, three runs or whatever, and like seven Ks all day long. That was a pretty solid day on the mound.
Didn't get the win. There were we're one night earlier than normal. Yep. Tons of bullpen blowups tonight. Mm-hmm. Wednesday night, it was I think the Rays, Jason Adam and Fairbanks gave up six runs.
Yep.
I think one of those six was the Manfred man. Yankees gave up a three run walk off. There's a few more. It was a bad bullpen.
The Cubs blew it big time.
Yeah, the Cubs, I think, like gave
six
up
to one. They gave up six runs.
Tucker was walked it off.
Bloodbath. It was funny. I guess is the way I look at it. We had such bad starting pitching for so long. We actually had good starting pitching tonight. And then the bullpen screwed it up. It's just the offense, man. And people keep bringing up the point. We haven't even got to the hottest part of the year yet. Like, it's going to be wild. Like, and I'll say this much. Like, in the Discord that I'm in, someone was asking, because like JP France had a bad start. He's had three starts now. Two decent starts, one bad start. The reactions, are we dropping JP France? I'm like, right now, he still has a pulse and an arm that works. I'd be like not getting too crazy with that just yet. Like it was he dominant? No, but the landscape of pitching right now, he's on the Astros, and that's just one example. But just in general, like, stop overreacting, people. Like, we need to just take the guys that are alive and move on right about now and see.
Yeah, where man. We can go. I mean, you were saying at the top, just shocker, more injuries, shocker, another call up. But like, it was just another brutal week of, like, if you lost Nick Lodolo, you lost Dustin May. Like, there's just, you said it well, like a pulse. That's what we're looking for at this point. And it's, I mean, we'll get to it when we talk about the matchup game. I could not find
horrible.
Anybody who I wanted to start this weekend. So it's just, I don't know. That the thing that, like, it's all, you know, there's a little bit of like, woe is me and that kind of vibe out there, but just keep in mind, this is happening to everybody. And whoever adjusts to this, adapts to this, just kind of keeps going, keeps making those picks ups and that sort of thing is going to be more successful than not, because it's not just your team. It's not just you. that is having all these terrible pitching outings. It's everybody.
Yeah, and the thing is, with people overreacting, it's sending guys back to the waiver wire. So like, I brought it up on my show with Curlin earlier in the week, and it wasn't based on Dustin May getting hurt, obviously. It was more on like Syndergaard and whatnot. But I mentioned like Gavin Stone, for instance, where people spend a lot of money. He's coming back sooner than later, obviously likely sooner now. There's going to be a lot of other guys like that, so I'm trying to say. So if you can speculate now, and that might be tough with all the injuries, I get it. But now is the time to just start speculating on dudes that might be able to start filling roster spots up. We talk about the long relievers all the time. They're going to be even more important this year. It's going to be crazy how important they'll be. It's a battle of attrition with the injury front, but it's also a battle of just, can you persevere and chug along and make it happen? And everyone's getting short on Fab. So that's why I mentioned the speculating. Like, I was getting Gavin Stone for less than $5 everywhere when people were spending, what, $75 to $100 and something dollars a couple weeks ago. Will it work out? No, I'm just using it as an example, of course. But if people go and drop JP France, you can go get JP France like $3 probably. Or just like little things like that, that they'll probably have more good starts than bad is the way I look at it. They're going to have bad ones. There's no denying that. There's going to be blowups all over the place. Like, no pitcher is safe. Spencer Strider struggled on Wednesday night. Like, no one is safe right now. So just realize that.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about some of this news, notes, and whatnot. Jazz Chisholm. This frustrates me. Frustrates me so bad because, yeah, I give it. He could have gotten hurt anywhere. I'm aware of that. But this was a straight-up outfield running into the wall. Like, this is what we talked about in the preseason with Jazz Chisholm. He plays hard. This is going to happen with Jazz. It did. When he got up, I thought it was way worse than it was. Then it actually became worse as it was. But it looked like just a minor injury, a turf toe, went inside a specialist. It's so bad, he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah. The power speed was great. Average struggled a bit so far this season. I'm not dropping him right now. I am concerned, though, if it's a turf toe, how's the speed when he comes back? There are questions there, but this is the first of a few we're going to talk about that are lingering injuries that are going to take some time. So what's your thoughts on Jazz?
It's tough. I mean, and it's especially tough because, like, I mean, I remember talking about Jazz before the season, and, you know, what I said was, you know, I wanted to see at a second, third round price and 15 teamers, I wanted to see him go a full season and do it. Like, I was a little bit worried about the injury history. This is not that. This was just a fluky, like, learning a new position on the fly, which has its positives and negatives, usually negatives. Just totally came back to bite him in the ass. And yeah, like, was off to, despite the 220 average, 7 homers in those 14 bags. Like, this is a big hole. I'm definitely keeping him as well. The replacements look even worse, man. Like, Garrett Hampson for the maybe what, eighth year in a row, ninth year in a row, Garrett Hampson season, right?
Well, it's so bad because they've also lost Jesus Sanchez there. They've had a glutton of injuries, especially the outfield for the Marlins. So, like, it just locks Jesus Sanchez in. You mentioned Garrett Hampson. I was like, goodness gracious. John Birdie has played the outfield before. So that is a somewhat of an option.
Like, it's interesting. It was around this time last year when Birdie bags became a thing. And I don't remember exactly how many bases he stole. I want to say like 20 or 30 in about 6 weeks. And it started right about now because of stuff like this. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year, but Birdie did lead off Wednesday night against a lefty, played shortstop. And like you said, could play outfield. I don't know.
Hey, here's a fun game for you. Congressman or MLB player, Peyton Burdick.
Definite congressman, former running mate.
He's going to be a starting outfielder for the Marlins right now. That's where they're at. That's my point. He's on roster resource. He's a starting outfielder. He had 10 homers and 6 steals in AAA, hitting .293 in 9 games with the Marlins. He has a stolen base, a homer. He's hitting .208, but he's always had a little power speed in the minors. I might say go pick him up. I don't know because I need to find out more about him, but I literally just pulled up roster resource, and he's the projected right fielder right now. So I'm just echoing the issues that are taking place with this Marlins team. And in a 15 team or an NL only, he's probably very much in play. I'll say that much. But it's rough in the streets. But he sounds like a congressman. 100% sounds like a congressman.
Absolutely does. And the center fielder, man, like it has been Hampson every single day.
It's going to be him.
It's ugly. It's ugly. Yeah. Definitely one of those teams we talk about bad pitching. Like, This is where you're streaming against. This is a gold mine.
Yeah, because it's the combination of this improved offensive world we live in, and now you put a bad defense behind them. Poof.
Yep.
It's gonna get rough.
Yep.
Another bad one here, Nick Lodolo. We knew the injury was bad. This is apparently what he's been dealing with since spring training, and it's a stress reaction in his shin area, tibia, is what they call it, tibia. They say it basically mimics a shin splints, if anybody's had those. So he's in a walking boot because you're supposed to put, like, zero pressure on it, basically. Like, let it literally just do nothing. So he's going to be in a boot for 2 weeks, have another MRI. Then they'll reassess the situation. The goal is to have him throwing again in 4 weeks and maybe back in 6 to 8 weeks.
Brutal. Escalated quickly too, because it was like, we're gonna push him back 3 days,
and it was a calf the whole time. Yeah, this is the opposite side of the calf, if people know we're on the leg.
So, like, and the worst part is, like, I had just written up Lodolo at HQ in terms of, like, yes, the numbers, the surface stats are absolutely terrible. I can't remember if we talked about him last week as a trifecta guy, but the luck factors were just absolutely terrible for Nick Lodolo. 27% homer to fly ball rate. Like, that is almost unfathomable, even in Great American Small Park. The BABIP was just absolutely brutal. Like, positive regression was coming for Nick Lodolo. If you drafted Lodolo, not only are you not going to see that positive regression for some time, if you even hold on to him at this point, you got the worst of Nick Lodolo, and that's brutal, because I really did like what I saw in terms of the actual skills of pitch mix change with Lodolo. Like, I thought things were changing very quickly for him in the positive, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. Have you seen the Reds rotation now, like the non-Hunter Green?
I saw a tweet about the three guys going this weekend because Green got pushed to Sunday, and the two ahead of him, I'm like, oh no. And they brought up the kid that pitched in Coors who pitched well, but if you look at his minor league numbers, they're atrocious.
Yeah, Williamson.
Yeah, it's bad.
Which, yeah, that's awful Reds of them. Like,
yep.
We'll call you up and make your major league debut at
and he actually Coors. Pitched. Yeah, it's not good.
Target. He's not a like he no. actually Brandon Williamson.
He's a target to stream against.
But yeah, like you alluded to the numbers at AAA. It's Ben Lively. It's Luke Weaver. It's Graham Ashcraft, who I think gave up
five or six
more runs again tonight. Yep. Man, any hitter lineups going into small park?
Even if they're coming to you. Future, even if they're coming to you, I'll take
that's true. Lineups. They could play in like... I don't know if you saw the old America. Like USC Olympic Stadium yeah. where right field is like 600 feet yeah. away.
Bring it.
Go for it.
And they're bad. Like, it's so bad that I was looking at getting ready for the Fab stuff this weekend, and I was looking at the projected pitchers and said, B. Lively. Like, when did Blake Lively become a pitcher for the Reds? It's so bad. It reminds me of Major League.
My little podcasting hack for the RotoWire on the RotoWire probables grid, it does say like B. Lively, it's got their little, it's just the first initial for their first name. If you do mouse over their name, the little like link shows up and it does have their full name after that. So
good hack. Good life hack. Right,
little tip. Little tip out there.
Look at you. Well done.
Are you holding on to, like, if you had Lodolo, I don't know if you have him in like 12 teamers.
I have him in one.
What do you think?
I'm trying to, but I just feel like this is one of those that's going to take some time. And like, it's the same thing. Like, where he's not on our list because it happened last week, but like Max Fried, I'm holding on to. And he was another 4 to 6 week dude. If I have to pick between the two, I'm keeping Max Fried. Because I think I might have both of them on the same team, so that's kind of the conundrum we're under. I'd hold Lodolo if you can, but he's one of the guys if you have to move on, I get it.
Yep, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I also agree with if you have Fried and Lodolo and you're listening to this podcast and still following fantasy baseball, good on you. I would drop Lodolo before Fried.
I'm pretty sure I did that this past week. I'm pretty sure I dropped Lodolo and kept Fried for the week. We'll see how long that lasts for. But yeah, it's going to be ugly, and it gets uglier because on Wednesday afternoon, Dustin May pitched one inning, and his velocities were all down a couple miles an hour on every pitch. The red flags, the sirens are going off. he has a right flexor strain. That's not good, folks. I just want to point something out. I saw Justin Mason tweet it, so I just went even deeper looking at Fangraphs. In 2020, he threw 56 innings. And this is with majors and minors. 21, he threw 23 innings. In 22, he threw 51 innings. He was already at 47 this year. Like, that's almost a high since, like, 2019. I'm not saying that's what did it, but this is always a concern. Like, I've been off of May forever. If anybody's listening to any of my stuff, like, I'm just scared of what he's got. I didn't want to see this. I'm not rooting for this, but I'm thinking this is a – I'm dropping Dustin May. Let me just put it that way. Dropping Dustin May.
Yeah, I mean – well, and so, like, before we even, yeah, like, it's brutal for him. Like, missed 2 years with Tommy John, finally came back, and then, like, this, it's...
He has a career made for the bullpen, it looks like, right about now.
Yeah, kind of, I don't know if he's lucky. I was a little surprised, I think 4 to 6 weeks, like, I was a little surprised that was the prognosis. It seems like it would be something longer than that. He's going to get the PRP injection, like, none of these things you want to hear. No. At all. And I don't think Dustin May, despite the 268 surface ERA, despite the 0.94 whip, this dude, I would drop him pretty quickly. He's kind of the anti-Lodolo, where, like, negative regression was going to come very hard for Dustin May. I don't care if he's on the Dodgers or not. Yep. Like, a 6.5% swinging strike rate, that may be the worst in baseball. If not, it's... Yep. It's like in Chris Flexen territory, which is you don't want to be in.
Yeah.
And so, like, I just from the skills perspective, this is not a profile worth holding on to. They haven't really named a replacement. I mean, I would think it's Gavin Stone, right?
That's the discussion I've had on Twitter with a lot of people. It's like, why wouldn't you bring up Bobby Miller? I'm like, I would love it to be Bobby Miller. That's the guy I've wanted the whole time. But the reason I say it's Gavin Stone, it's because they already started his clock. There's just so many things, and they're like, well, he was so bad. I'm like, so you're going to tell me a guy with the pedigree and the prospect numbers we've seen had two rough starts in his debut, and you're going to cross him off the list now? That's not how this game works, people. Like, that's just not how it goes. And the Dodgers are in first place already, like, quietly out of nowhere, they're back in first. Like, I didn't even realize that. It felt like, and they can afford this. They're better off bringing Gavin Stone up now and seeing what he can do and see what happens. So I think it's Gavin Stone. What they'll probably do is what a lot of teams do is they'll bring a reliever up for a few days, and then they'll bring Stone up to make it fill in. That'd be my assumption. We'll see how that goes. But at the same time, I would be speculating on Bobby Miller too, because I don't think Thor is much longer for this world as well. So,
I agree with that. They did just bring Bobby Miller up to AAA, and the results have been marginal. Did strike out 6 over 6 innings, 1 run, 2 hits earlier today. So there is that for Miller. I think they keep Miller down there a little bit longer. But, like, yeah, at this point, man, like, I mean, despite the record, despite the recent surge for LA, we've talked about this a lot. They're just not deep. And so, like, one more injury, I think Bobby Miller is thrust in. And it's a really good point on Gavin Stone. Like, the market's totally giving up on him after one bad start and getting sent back down. And a little bit of that is, like, the start for Gavin Stone in AAA wasn't that great either, but this is not a guy you just give up on. I think from a FAB perspective, as opposed to dropping $300 again on the next starting pitching prospect, getting Gavin Stone for, like, 40 sounds pretty good.
Yep.
Off the rebound discount.
Saying, like, those are the kind of guys just start, like, I know it's extra work that everybody probably doesn't have time for, but once in a while, just peruse roster resource and see what teams have potential holes coming up in rotations and just kind of see what's out there. Like, I'm not saying it's going to work everywhere, but get them now for a couple bucks. Like, that's how people got, like, Louis Varland for cheap. Like, little things, like, it doesn't sound like much, but in the world we're living in right now, that's freaking tremendous. So take your chance. And it makes it a lot easier if you have to drop them, a lot easier. To not worry about that hit.
That's true. Me dropping Mason Miller this coming weekend is going to hurt. That was like $80, but still.
Yeah. And I didn't. There is going to be an expensive one this week, though, I think. This is the one. And again, I've had questions already tonight. Should I pick up Matthew Liberatore and drop so-and-so? And I said 99% of me says yes. There's still 1% that says he might not be staying in the rotation because they brought him up to move Wainwright back a day. But I've been starting to read through the tea leaves that they're either going to go six man or maybe Steven Matz takes a breather type situation. and that's my point, to like look at roster resource and see some of these pitchers that maybe need a break. Steven Matz needs a break. That's kind of one of those things. Liberatore's a beast. And he, to me, maybe people wanted more. I don't know what they could have wanted, but he did not disappoint. Five innings, three hits, no runs, three walks, six Ks. Like, pretty darn outstanding to me. He's been what I love about him compared to some of these other pitchers we've talked about, he's made eight starts so far, and he's thrown 46 innings. So he's going 5 to 6 innings in every start. If you go and look at a lot of these AAA pitchers, they're not doing that. And Joe, the fact he can already go 5 or 6 and then maybe continue to get deeper, that's tremendous to me. So, yeah, I love Liberatore. Don't know if I can afford him this week, but I think it's a big one.
That's going to be the thing. Like, that's the key, is can you afford him? Because, again, I mean, we sound like a broken record, but more injuries. So your Dustin May owner, your Nick Lodolo owner, they need starting pitching. Everyone needs starting pitching. Yes, money's a little bit low, but like Liberatore's going to go for, I think, just as much as Eury Pérez did last week, as much as Bryce Miller did the week before. Probably should. I don't know. But in terms of like, if you're comparing him to like Eury Pérez, Pérez probably has the higher ceiling. But we talked last week, like he's already halfway. Pérez is already halfway at last year's innings total, whereas Liberatore threw 124 innings in 2021, 140 innings last year, and so he's 100 innings below that this year. So, like, if Liberatore stays in the rotation from a workload standpoint, he's going the whole year. I think.
I got 20 more starts in him, at least. Like, so, let's just say 120 more innings, six innings a start, that's 20 more starts. Like, he's... Yep. He's rolling.
And, like, I mean, AAA numbers, whatever, you take it with a grain of salt, but, like, the strikeouts are there, 30% K rate, 50% ground ball rate. Like, I love strikeouts and ground balls. That's what I want.
Especially in that home ballpark. Pretty darn good.
So it's – you're going to have to pay up. Will it be worth it? I don't know. But, like, the signs are there.
I said, I don't know if I had the money, but this was the guy I was waiting for after Tanner Bibee came up, because I trust there's a lot of great prospect. I always feel bad when there's a lot of great prospect analysts. Like, James Anderson is near the top of the list for people that I listen to for fantasy stuff. So when I had him on about a month ago, when like the early pitchers came up, we listed off all these other guys, Liberatore. This is before like all these Millers and everybody else came up. And I basically said, okay, per dollar, who would you want the rest of the way? Like, out of these, who would you rank as the top guy, second guy, whatever? Liberatore is his top dude. This was his guy. He's like, this is the guy I want. He's all, you don't know when you're going to get him. So innings wise per dollar, does it make sense? Who knows? This is actually a little earlier, I think they were thinking, most prospect guys. So, and James isn't the only one. So my point is, Liberatore is very much a brand in the prospect fantasy game that is worth acquiring. That's what I'm trying to get at, the nicest way I could say it. And the other thing, I don't know, there probably will be more, but the only other real big name is Gavin Williams right now. I mean, he just got brought up to AAA with the Guardians. Bryce Miller, we talked about, could be another one, but there's not a ton more. Kyle Harrison of the Giants, he's been a wishy-washy. So Liberatore is one of the last quote-unquote big ones to come up. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
No, there'll be more because there's all these injuries, but as of now, but
in terms, yeah, like, no, I see what you're saying. In terms of like prospect ranking and pedigree and that sort of thing, definitely.
There'll be more of the surprise. Like, I don't think anybody thought Bryce Miller was going to be coming up this soon, stuff like that. So we'll get some jumps because we'll have to with injuries. Matt McClain got the call by the Reds, not because of an injury, though. He just got the call because the Reds did something right. That was kind of surprising. Now bring Encarnacion up. That'd be awesome. But McClain, power, speed, hitting for average. We saw the speed on full display when he turned a single into a double in Coors. He's been pretty darn good hitting second. If he hits second full-time for the Reds, that's going to be outstanding. So what's your thoughts on him? Because we keep talking about all these pitchers. We've had Mervis. We've had Morel. Now we're starting to get we have a couple more hitters to talk about, actually. So we're getting prospect hitters now coming up.
It's kind of weird. McClain sat Wednesday against a lefty. He's right-handed. Yep. But it's against two righties,
respect, pure respect.
I guess. do you see his minor league numbers? Like, it's
insane,
absolutely bonkers. Mm-hmm. 12 homers, 10 steals, less than 20% K rate at AAA this year, 27 bags, 17 homers. last year. And I think in NFBC leagues, he made his debut on Sunday or Monday. So he's going to be...
It'd be Monday, because if it was Sunday, he would have been in the player pool.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
HQ's number five prospect for the Reds. So I don't know too much about him, but like the numbers are fantastic. The folks that I know that watch the Reds closely really like what they see here. It is going to be playing time. Like if McLean stays in second, like in that park, and it's really not like a terrible lineup around him. It's not great, but
wish they could face their own pitching.
Yeah. And their scrimmages in the alternate site.
Inter-squad games we're in.
It's certainly worth, like, and it's funny, we say there hasn't been many hitters. Prospect-wise, there really hasn't. Matt Mervis was the big one, and he's completely fallen.
Romero's holding that crown right now.
Yes, he is.
The next one I wanted to mention is Mark Vientos. This one... Another one where you're kind of like, wow, the Mets actually did it. He's hitting .333 with 13 bombs in AAA, 37 RBIs. We've seen 20-plus home runs in back-to-back seasons in the minor leagues, hitting for decent averages, I'll say, overall. The question I have for you, he started at third base on Wednesday with the lefty on the mound. Brett Beatty keeps getting platoon with Eduardo Escobar, but now Escobar played second base while Vientos played third base. The frustrating part we're seeing here, and this is why I ask it, is you had Alvarez behind the dish. He's now playing pretty regularly because Nito's on the IL, so that's good. It took an IL stint, is my point. Yeah. Brett Beatty's still been in a full platoon, even though his underlying stats look really good, that like let the kid play. Vientos can play too, but looks like he might be playing the same position as Beatty. Do you see where I'm going with this?
It's a log jam. Homer tonight, too.
Yep. So did Alvarez. Like, Alvarez is heating up, folks. Like, and he's like 12% owned in Yahoo. So figure that one out, people. Just gonna throw that out there.
I think. I mean, just for me, the combination of Vientos, at least for HQ, he wasn't as highly regarded as like a McLean. And I don't know if the playing time's there. I do wonder if this is just a pure platoon. And so, like, I would much rather. I know they're different positions. Much rather take a shot at McLean, who I think is pretty safe at shortstop most days, whereas Vientos, like, I don't know. I don't know if the pedigree's even there either. So it's exciting. Like, I'd love to see the Mets be aggressive with this, but I don't know. I'm probably holding off.
That's why I asked the question. I knew you'd have a similar insight. At least I figured you would, because there's a lot of excited people already. Like, I gotta go grab him. I'll just be like, I'll rain on the parade for 2 seconds, folks. Like, just take us. Like, you don't have to pick him up till Sunday. We'll watch the rest of the week. We'll see how this plays out. That'll be my 2 cents to you guys. Figure that out. Now it gets rough if you're a Minnesota Twins fan or you roster Minnesota Twins players. Just, like, grab a beer, sit back for a second. Wednesday was not your day. Joey Gallo left with a back injury. He's day-to-day. He's been hitting home runs. We'll talk about him more later, actually. Jorge Polanco left with a mild hamstring injury that tightened up on him. He'll be reevaluated on Thursday. That's not good. And then the big one, Nick Gordon, fractured shin. So he's out for quite some time. Means Edward Julian's coming. He got scratched before their game in AAA. Basically, like, hey, don't, like, bubble wrap him and send him to where we're at right now, please. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
The good scratch.
Yeah, it was a good scratch. And they already are missing Max Kepler in the outfield. Trevor Larnach's back. He has Buxton's, like, anywhere, like, any black cat away from getting hurt. How are you approaching this situation?
First off, like, man, the Twins, is there a more snake bitten like lineup? Like, I don't know. I have this problem. Maybe I'm just getting old where, like, I just confuse guys with each other all the time. Like, I get so confused over Max Kepler, over Trevor Larnach, over this just like glut of outfield Twins that are always injured. I can just not tell them apart because they're always in and out for each other. And like, it's just crazy how Farmer's in that group. I know he's at third, but like, it's brutal. The Nick Gordon thing, like, RIP, the prospect hype, or the preseason hype, I should say. I had him as a 2020 guy in the forecaster. It's rough. I think Edward Julian is worth. I'm pretty excited about him. Yeah. Pretty excited about him. We saw what he could do. There was a 30% K rate and 30 plate appearances in the majors when he first came up, but like he wasn't chasing. Like I don't know. First time seeing major league pitching. Hit 280, four homers, three steals for Julian at AAA this year. Like I think this run is going to be a little bit more extended, and so. If you need second base, and especially with like Jorge Polanco potentially injured again, I think Julian's going to get some good run here.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention when Julian went back to AAA on April 21st, he's played 19 games now in AAA. Since then, he hit .275, two homers, two stolen bases, and 900 OPS, 174 ISO, near 21% walk rate and near 21%. They had both 20.9% walk and K rates. So you get a .451 OBP. That's the kind of stuff you want to see when a kid comes up, struggles, goes back, and he's still like playing well. So they should give him all the run in the world on paper, because otherwise, like if you look at the roster resource page for the Twins, it's Donovan Solano, Willie Castro, Michael A. Taylor should get more run in the outfield. I guess give Julian the time, boys and girls. That's just the way I look at it. So let's have fun here then. Julian or McClain, which one do you want this week?
I'll go McClain. Slightly. It's close, but I'll go McClain.
Yep. Situation. Yep.
I think a little higher ceiling and a little I just think he's the shortstop.
Yep. 100% with you on that one. Both fun guys.
Both ahead of Yentes for me.
100%. All right, we'll wrap it up there. There's a million injuries between the weeks we talk to each other, trust me. So we'll leave it there. Let's play our weekly game, Ryan. This is another fun week. I looked like I love the scoreboard right now. It's looking good. We split again. That's the best way I'll say it. So I'll let you have the floor, Mr. Recap.
I just can't catch up to you, man. You're up three on me on the
things
year,
I've never heard in my life. Trust me. So appreciate it.
Yeah, you're winning the race, but I don't know. Your fictitious person, Jake Irvin, turned out to be a real fictitious person, and actually, I was a little nervous. Scoreless, I think, through four, and then the Mets, I think, dropped eight.
Yeah, they blew up on him. Yep.
And so that blew up. So I took the pitching side. JP Sears pitched really well again. I think JP Sears is kind of flying under the radar. Fantasy-wise, like he's just not going to get many wins and that sort of thing. But from a pure ratio and strikeout aspect, JP Sears, I think, is pretty sneaky. You missed the best of Gavin Sheets.
Yeah, he's doing it right still now. Beat me. Yeah.
He started off last week fine. He homered today, I believe.
He's homered in back-to-back days now.
Back-to-back days. Did very little for you this weekend, but Weimer did even less for me. So you beat me 3-2. And our point system is walks plus total bases. So 3-2 is
it's sad.
It's pretty bad. That's kind of like where we not quite our epic 1-1 on opening weekend between Max Kepler and Joey Wendell. That might go in the Hall of Fame of futility. But I don't know. So you're going back to looking up to this week, you're going back to the Gavin Sheets well, huh?
Yep, going back again, and I almost picked his teammate Jake Berger. I'll be honest; those are two guys I was looking at.
Yeah,
I'm going Sheets though because he gets Greinke, Lyles, and Keller. I'll take that situation all week long, and I picked Sheets just because he mashes. Well, he should. He's doing it now. He didn't do it last weekend. It's a great situation for him to mash, and we're doing total bases plus walks. So like, get a couple doubles or a home run or something. He could do that in a heartbeat. Berger's been playing great, and he's been playing versus righties, and he hit another home run on Wednesday as well. But I went Sheets on that one. I expect one, hopefully two extra base hits somewhere in there. And I'm hoping for at least 5+ points. Let's put it that way. Like, don't embarrass me this week, Gavin Sheets. So that's my guy. Enjoy the stream while you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And Berger's a good call as well. It's weird. Sheets is like the only lefty platoon guy that the White Sox had. I thought there were – thought there were more, but that schedule, according to HQ's ratings for the weekend, it's not even that close. The White Sox have the easiest schedule going against that trio of Royals. I went ahead with Oswaldo Cabrera. I think he's going to play enough. He's in Great American Small Park against the aforementioned and beleaguered Cincinnati rotation. So I just think it's bombs away for pretty much the entire Yankee. Like, this is probably the shot in the arm that the Yankees need I think I'm forgetting again, shut out today, but on Wednesday night. But I think Cabrera is gonna be just fine this weekend. And I love the park, love the matchup.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on the Yankees going to town this weekend. If you're playing any DFS, just Calhoun and Bowers, they're always cheap. Just gonna put that in your ears right now.
Bowers was a popular pickup this weekend or last weekend.
And everybody was happy because like Monday he let off, and then he hit like seventh, then he hit third, then he hit fifth. Like, he's been all over that lineup the entire week. So see where good old Bowers goes. Okay, I'll let you have the floor. I'll let you go with your pitcher first, and then I'll give mine. So you're going with a guy coming off the IL.
Shaking my head as I do it. Full disclosure, had about 5 minutes to make this pick before the pod. Did not see very many, if any, interesting starting pitcher choices. So it was rough. I'm going Carlos Carrasco, who's making his first start back from the IL, so not ideal. Last rehab start pitched like 52 pitches, also not ideal, and has looked terrible this year, also not ideal in three starts. But I don't know, just given the lack of other options, given the what I thought of Carlos Carrasco, and I think this is not just Carrasco, but like a broader takeaway, is don't just throw away your off-season valuations of players. I was really high on Carlos Carrasco coming into the season because of what he did last year, and I think a lot of that still holds. Yes, in Carrasco's case, like he's older, he's been hurt, so maybe this is not the same version of Carrasco that we saw last year, but I don't know, hoping for like 4 or 5 innings if I get lucky, 4 or 5 Ks, but not feeling that great about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm going to laugh when you beat me this week after all the crap I talked before the show. But
you were shocked. You tried to get me to pick someone else.
I thought I was trying to be a nice guy, so I just remember that. I went Brandon Bielak, and I was going to go Brandon Bielak last week and decided to go, you know, Cole Irvin's illegitimate cousin, and that didn't work out so well. So Brandon Bielak is I'm going with this week. And he threw 5 innings, 1 earned, 4 Ks against the White Sox. That would have been a nice 8 points, which would have won the week. So, yeah, frustrating to say the least. What I like about Bielak, it's been at least 4 innings in every start, 2 runs or less in every start. He had 4 Ks, 0 Ks, and 6 Ks. So as long as he gave me 4 Ks, I like my chances there. And he gets the Oakland Athletics. And I'll say this much, though. It's an ace team that has actually hit the ball better over the last couple weeks, like Ryan with Noda. And Bleday and a couple other guys showing up. There's still a lot of swing and miss in that lineup, a ton of swing and miss in that lineup, but they have played better. I'll give them that grain of salt. But yeah, I'm going to go Brandon Bielak and hope I can somehow take care of the bone spurs in Carrasco's elbow.
I think DraftKings has Team Bubba at minus 350 this weekend. Yeah, you're looking good.
I'll be honest. Ryan puts the board together and says the sheet's ready, so that I added the news and stuff. It's a little behind the scenes. Ryan picks his hitter or pitcher first, lets me know which one I get to pick first. He had the chance to take pitching first, so he was a nice guy and gave me the option first.
I flip it.
It rotates weekly usually, yeah. But I got lucky this week because that was the thing. I don't know if we said it this week. You guys should know by now, I think, but if you're a new listener, they have to be rostered in 50% or less of NFBC OCs, 12-team leagues.
12 teams,
yep. So we can't just take any pitcher this weekend. So that's where it gets real bad, is less than 50% part. And yeah, not good.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. Bloom Board Time, another fun one here. Got some nice listener interaction on the Twitter. We will discuss them, plus more players. So, Ryan, the floor is yours to discuss what we are talking about on tonight's Bloom Board.
All right, cool. And then I'm going to just put up there. I'm going to throw up for the screen. For the video crew, new component this year. You know, we're evolving. We're not quite at Pat McAfee level production quality at this point, but we are to the point where we're able to throw the Bloom Board on the screen, man. This is, you know, this is groundbreaking stuff. What I did for this one, so last week was a little bit more like in the weeds in terms of skills, looking at luck factors for starting pitchers. Kept it simple this week. Flip back to hitters, but just looking at the, I don't know, breakouts and busts, basically. My top 15 hitters that have improved their batting average and their home run pace the most compared to last season. And then on the flip side, the busts, right? The relative busts. Guys whose batting average and home run pace are well off from last season. And so I did this kind of, a little formula that just ranked them that way, and got some really interesting names. And yeah, a lot of great kind of feedback on Twitter about guys to talk about. Like, it's crazy. The number one guy in green, when we say green, those are the breakouts, the reds, the busts. Number one guy in green is someone I think everyone wants to talk about, and that's Taylor Walls. Like, of any, this isn't even counting stolen bases. I'm just looking at batting average and home runs. But even with that, Taylor Walls is one of the biggest breakouts of 2023 so far. And that's the key to this theme for the episode tonight, is so far, because does it hold, does it not? That's where we dig in.
Yeah, we'll go straight at Taylor Walls. You mentioned the steals. You aren't down there. Two more steals on Wednesday night. So he has 9 on the season now.
Yeah.
He's walking over 11% of the time, 24%. He has a 287 ISO on the season. It's a surprise. Like you said, last year with Tampa Bay, 8 homers and 10 stolen bases. In the minors in the past, it was like kind of similar. Like, maybe he could get to 10 homers, usually like 10 to 15 steals, give or take. Yeah, he used to actually run a lot more early on in the minors. Batting average is like 270-ish, 260 in the minors. So this is quite a jump. If you look at like the underlying stuff, like the StatCast metrics, 6.9% barrel this year, at 6.2 last year. Hard hit rate's up to 37.5, which doesn't scream power hitter. His max EV is even down from the previous years. So when you look at Taylor Walls, what do you see? Because I look at all that, and I've had this argument with Michael Kirlin a few times, because I'm talking about, like, let's stream Taylor Walls. They got like 6 righties this week. And he's like, no, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, but it's the Rays. He's going to play every day. And I get the same arguments that everyone's saying right now. Like, this isn't sustainable. So what are you seeing?
It's crazy. And before we get into Walls, like, specifically, and we've had this conversation before of like, how much do you trust a rest of season projection versus like what you're actually seeing? I think this came up with, like, we were talking about like Nolan Gorman a couple of weeks ago, and it's interesting, like, how and where we kind of ended up was, or where I ended up at least with it, because you kind of felt much more on the side of like, yes, look at the rest of the season projection, but it's not gospel. And Taylor Walls, like, I kind of agree with that for guys of Walls's ilk, where there's not much of a major league track record to really look at. The major league track record that we have with Walls is admittedly like terrible. I mean, he's been one of the worst hitters in baseball over the last two seasons, in 21 and 22, and mostly was up because of defensive versatility, and he is a really good defender. So how do you weigh that with skills that I think have genuinely improved beneath the surface? Like, yes, I mean, Bubba, you laid out a great case for like the power. I mean, 7 homers to 5 barrels is not sustainable. Usually your homers are like half of what your barrels are. So I don't know about the power, but he's running a lot, like you said, with those 9 steals, making improvements at the plate. Swing and strike is down. He's not chasing as much. The K rate's down. So, like, I don't know. I wrote up Walls this week in the Speculator, and, you know, I don't think anyone's expecting him to keep this 7-homer, 9 stolen base pace over an entire season. But can he go like 20, 25 with like a 250 batting average? despite the bad track record, I absolutely think he can. And I think if you look at a rest of season projection for someone like Walls, which is a lot of times right, I'm going to take the over just because this is an age 26 guy, some pedigree, not much of a major league track record. Like, I think these guys can kind of change as they're seeing major league pitching for the second year, third year. And with the skills that are mostly backing this up, it looks pretty good to me. So if I had to go like end of season line, I'd probably go 15 homers, 20 steals, something like that, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree with you, because like I said, I've had this argument with Kurland almost weekly for a streaming option. When I look at guys that make dramatic changes, if they're young like Walls, you said he's 26, that's what stands out to me. Like, that's when changes can be made. It's when like Joey Meneses comes out of nowhere at like age 30, you're like, what in the world's going on? And he's still been good this year, but there's no power. Like, the power is gone, where Taylor Walls could be making that shift. I'm 100% with you on there. I forget what Jason Collette said. He talked about him one day because he watches every single Rays game. He's like, I've seen Walls, like, I think he said he got bigger. He, like, the power is legit. Just, it's not as consistent, so on and so forth. I'll give an example. I think you'll understand this one when I say it. How many people told me there's no way Thairo Estrada can hit for power because of his metrics? Dude's already got 9 bombs. 9. Like, certain guys, when they do barrel the ball, it's like, it's probably not, maybe not sustainable for the full run, but like you said, so he takes a step back, but still 15-20, 15-25, it's still pretty darn good. So, bottom line, I'm blabbering too long here. Taylor Walls, is, I think, is better than people want to give credit for, because all they're doing is looking at numbers, and most of the time, numbers is fine, but I've always been a believer there's also other parts of the game to look at besides just the numbers on a computer screen. So
there's also an interesting like team context thing at play here. Like, the Rays cannot miss right now. And maybe that's just narrative. Maybe that's just lucky or heater or whatever. Or is it some kind of organizational change philosophy to how they're scouting opposing pitchers, like stuff like that, that we don't know the answer to, but I look at this breakout list. Taylor Walls is number 1. Yandy Diaz is number 5. Harold Ramirez is in the top 10. That's 3 Rays in the top 10. And again, not even counting Randy Rosarena is on this list as well, a little bit further down. But like, I don't know. The old saying is like, is there something in the water? But like, is Tampa Bay as an organization doing something that we don't even know about? They're a smart ass organization that's also kind of driving a team-wide improvement. Just something to think about.
Yeah, Yandy and Ramirez are both guys that never hit for power either, and people said they can't do it. So that's a good point as well. And again, I keep saying Collette because he literally is Mr. Ray. He tweeted out a picture from the TV screen where he was watching it. I think it was on Tuesday where they hit 3 more home runs. That was their 14th game this season with 3 or more home runs. They had 13 total all of last year. So there is something in the water to what you're saying with Tampa Bay right now. I'll bring up the listener questions that involved Taylor Walls while we're still on the subject of him. Ben Tidd asked, it'd be cool to hear you guys take some Taylor Walls. I don't roster him on any teams, but he went from being one of the worst players last year to a pretty solid one so far. And that led to a discussion from Little Book of Calm. He talks about the average XBA is 281 to 251. So he's looking at the Statcast numbers we talked about where it's kind of like, this doesn't look right. The bad X projected 227. Yeah, that's a big drop off for sure. He looks at slug, X slug, 7 homers on 5 barrels, like max EV, all the stuff we've talked about. Ground ball rate didn't change. Pull percentage is down. He's hitting the ball at the middle more, which is confusing. You know, the zone contact, though, and the swinging strike have gone up. That's a biggie. That's kind of goes to my point with like, okay, he might not have the best barrel rates or hard hit rates, but what he's trying to make contact on are pitches you take out of the ballpark, if that makes sense at all. Like, he's hitting stuff in the zone that you can turn on and crush. He's got a 21.7% home run to fly ball. That's insane compared to what he's had in the past. But he says he doesn't believe the power. I think the average is falling at 240-ish. Speed may be real. And then the other tweet that Little Book had, that's a different one. Little so that was it on it. Taylor Walls. Brooke,
he brought it tonight. And some really good points.
So yeah.
It's interesting to see the, so we mentioned the Bad X like projection for Walls, and we look at end of season projection. So it's just interesting. We were talking a little bit before, but I was listening to, I believe it was the Launch Angle podcast, and Rob Silver talked about how this was this past week, how rest of season, comparing rest of season to preseason projection changes, because projection systems do, you know, as we get further into the system, into the season, do factor in more and more of what the current year production looks like. Taylor Walls, before the season, actually have the BetX preseason projections up. They Derek projected him for to hit 217. That rest of season projections up to 227. OPS 645. Derek had, let's see. Derek now has him at 685. So like a 50-point improvement in projected OPS. So even a lot of the projection systems are starting to, and this isn't including the season to date production. This is the rest of season. Yeah. They're already baking in a decent amount of improvement for Walls, and not to the point where he's a star, a great hitter, that sort of thing. But if he can be passable batting average with some pop, and then you tack on 20-25 bags, I don't know. And second, third shortstop, like that's also huge as well.
Yeah, I bet you guys didn't tune in to know that you're going to hear about Taylor Walls for 20 minutes, but here we are, folks. The hard hitting.
It's a fascinating. No, it's just
it
a
is.
Fascinating.
It is. That's why I'm not knocking. I'm just being sarcastic. Like, because I'm not, I said it a million times. I know you probably have as well. You wrote about him in the Speculator. I have legit I've talked about him probably every week for like the last 3 or 4 weeks when it comes to fat. Like, what are we doing? Why are we not picking him up? Like, there's something there, but then you look at the numbers, you're sitting there going, what the hell is it? Like, what is it? And that's one of those that, like we talked about last week with like the indicators of regression, one way or the other. You look at all the indicators from Walls and you're thinking there's no way this works, but it's working. He's one of those conundrums that's out there. All right, we will move on to I'm going to jump to one I'm just curious your thoughts on. I want to talk about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. This one's fun to me because this is a guy that like 2 years ago, 3 years ago was like the next big thing. He's in Toronto. This is a dude you can almost count for like 20 plus home runs, hit for an average. You're pretty pumped on him. And then in 2022, 5 homers, 3 steals, hit 291, just had zero power, just zapped completely. He was injured. He only played 120 games. So then he gets traded to Arizona. It kind of starts out slow, like nothing crazy. But man, oh man, Oakland can do things for guys. And plus, he had the weekend series. I can't remember who it was last week. Gurriel now has 7 home runs on the season. He's hitting 310, 26 runs, 25 RBIs. He's only striking out like 14.9% of the time. He's playing outstanding. So you talk about the gainers and average. Yeah, Gurriel went from 291 to 312, 6 homers to 27 homers in the gaining department. That's why I wanted to bring him up, because it's the dude that was like I said, we almost drafted him, penciled in 20 home runs. Last year, just fell off a cliff. Are you believing what we're seeing now?
Yes, absolutely. And Gurriel, like I had his box in the forecaster. Last year's power outage was injury related. He played through, I believe it was a wrist. Played through it, and then like I remember this was like 2 weeks after I filled out his freaking box in the forecaster, it came out that he was having surgery, and he basically played through. Yes, he did miss time, but he played through it. And second half power outage for Gurriel was really brutal. You look at the raw power metrics, I'm not just going to list them all off, but it has snapped right back to pre-2022 baselines, which is what you would kind of expect from someone who was hurt and had it taken care of with surgery. And you mentioned some of the plate skill gains, like, and not even gains. I mean, this is who Lourdes Gurriel is. He doesn't strike out much. He's going to hit for high batting average. Like you said, hit 291 last year. He pops on this list because of the power, and the power has snapped right back. 11 barrels, 7 home runs. So really not all that fluky. 47% hard hit rate. The homer to fly ball rate is at 18%, which again is right where it was at pre-2022 when he was on the Blue Jays. There were some concerns preseason with Gurriel of, yes, what if like 2022 was who he is and he's just declining and there's a lot of bodies in the outfield in Arizona. That's also kind of worked itself out. Like Jake McCarthy has exited stage right and Gurriel playing time, obviously, at this point is safe. So I am absolutely buying the current pace of Lourdes Gurriel. It's basically the same pace that we saw from him back in 2020 to 2021 when he was really pretty good for Toronto.
Yeah, very, very good. And Alec Thomas also got sent to the minor leagues on Wednesday.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, more security for Lourdes to make things happen. Jaron Duran. This is one that we were all pretty excited about when he got the call, thinking, okay, is this the year? Because I call him, this is the year of prospect pitchers, failed prospect hitters have figured it out year. Like, you know, there's so many of them, Senzel's and, you know, Duran's and many, many more down the list. Duran is feeling it. You look at just the on the bloom board here, 221 average last year, is up to 351. 8 homers last year, projected for 17 going forward type deal. And he's crushing, hitting 361 on the season. 3 homers already, 7 stolen bases. I was looking at it. He's got 106 plate appearances before Wednesday's game in the bigs. You know, he's already like basically halfway to his 2022 total. And he looks like a completely different man. The quality of contact metrics are all improved, which is great to see. The launch angle improvement is really big, in my opinion. That was a gigantic, almost a 4-degree jump for him, which tells you there's a swing change potentially with Jaron Duran. So what's your take on Jaron Duran? Because I am all in on this one.
And the context around the numbers that you just mentioned is all really good too. He's locked in as Boston's everyday center fielder, even leading off sometimes. And that's mostly Verdugo's spot, but playing every day.
And Verdugo left Wednesday's game, by the way.
Did he? Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, Duran is the backup. Weird thing to say. Backup leadoff man in Boston, of a pretty like sneaky good Boston offense too. So the context around Duran is fantastic. You mentioned the 7 steals, Bubba, which I'm not even incorporating in this board. I'm again just looking at batting average and homers. That's 7 steals on 7 attempts. He's been perfect, and so I would think that green light continues. My man is running a 448 BABIP, so like yes, the 351 batting average, of course, is not going to hold. Nobody really thinks that's going to hold, but can Jaron Duran sit at like 280 with some pop and steal 20 homers or steal 20 bags? I think so. So I think the current pace minus batting average, take maybe 70 points off where Duran's at in terms of batting average, but it looks beautiful.
Nolan Gorman, this is another big one. He's got he's on your board here, 226 average last year, 285 this year, 27 homers last year, 42 this year on the Seamer 600. And he's off to a great start, 10 homers, 3 steals, 13% walk rate, 283 average, as we discussed. The question I have, because everything else looks really, really good, of course, the playing time has been a conundrum. It's the nicest way I can put it. He's in a platoon. He comes in and pinch hits from time to time. It's just it's like a Josh Lowe situation. Not as bad. Josh Lowe's got a little better than Gorman. But like, what do we? I believe the changes, and I know we talked about this before. So I was talking about it a lot because you aren't as big of a fan on this as I am. But the board doesn't lie.
The board never lies. The board can mislead sometimes. The board, by definition, cannot lie. It is showing true numbers. I mean, this is another example. I mean, we've talked about it with Duran, talked about it with Walls. I mean, what you have seen and what you were saying about Gorman a couple weeks ago is showing through. More walks, fewer Ks, harder contact. Like, everything's happening at the same time. I gotta think, like, the playing time will be, I mean, this is a first rounder. He's 23. Like, the Cardinals, I think, need to just play, bite the bullet and do it. I mean, Gorman traditionally has not started against lefties. He did not start last weekend, Friday or Saturday against lefties, but did start Tuesday against a lefty. So like, maybe they're starting to realize what they need to do with Gorman. It's also nice having Wilson Contreras back at catcher and not taking up that DH spot. So Gorman can, I think he DH'd earlier this week as well. So I'm not too worried about the playing time starting to come around on Gorman, but a little bit too late. I was not as early on the train as you are.
Any more on the gainer side? So we can, well, otherwise we'll hit up some faders before the final listener questions.
Who else did we?
Like Ezekiel Ramsey.
Sean Murphy up there is.
Sean Murphy's a monster.
Is unreal. Max Muncy on a 52 home run pace if he got to 600 plate appearances is pretty wild. I think we got one question about Randy Rosarena as a first round pick next year.
Oh, in 2024. Yeah.
If Randy Rosarena keeps up this pace, I think he's going to be right there. Like, you cannot really pick a hole in his game and the consistency. This would be the third year in a row that Randy Rosarena would have over $25 of roto value in 5x5 leagues, second year in a row over $30 from someone who will be 29 next season. I could totally see Randy Rosarena being like a back end wheel first rounder next year.
Yeah, that was from Roger Dornknight at Dorncourt on Twitter. Is Randy making a run at first round in 2024? Yeah, he's a beast. So I hope he doesn't. I'd like to continue to get him for free in drafts. I call it free in like the third round. That'd be awesome. All right, let's talk about the flip side of this one. Manny Machado. This is when I know he's got the fracture in his hand now, so that'll kind of derail things a bit. But before that, he apparently didn't. 298 average last year, 231 this year. 30 home runs last year, 18 if he hits a 600 at bats this year. Yeah. And the real standout to me is if you look at his contact skills, 6.5% barrel rate is the lowest of his entire career. 39% hard hit rate is 10% down from last year. Also the lowest of his entire career. This guy is having some serious issues at the plate, Ryan. So what's your thoughts on Mr. Machado?
Machado has, we could have said this exact same thing about Nolan Arenado like 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And I lean again, we'll see what this injury is. He got hit and has that small fracture, may or may not go on the IL, but Manny Machado has earned my trust, and I think he will bounce, assuming health. I think he will bounce back to the guy he's been for a long, long time. So I just like that Arenado example of like this, even though it is like mid-May and Arenado started to heat up early May, we're still quite early in the season, 25% of the way through. So I'm not that concerned personally about Machado if the hand checks out. Like, yes, the power metrics look really bad, but I make this point a lot, like the skills can slump too. It's not just because he has a low barrel rate for a month and a half doesn't mean he's all of a sudden not a power hitter. That can come back as well. So I'm not that worried about Machado.
Fair enough. Danny Jansen had a walk-off home run on Wednesday night, but on this board, it ain't looking pretty. 260 average last year, 185 coming into Wednesday night. In 2023, 36 home runs last year, 18 potentially. That's not good, especially for a guy that hasn't hit the IL yet. We're used to the IL stints from Danny Jansen. That hasn't even happened yet. You know, the K rates aren't out of this world. I guess it's the highest of his career, which is ironic. 22.8, I wouldn't think it'd be that high for him. That's big. You know, BABIP's not great at 212. Still a 10% barrel rate. The hard hit rate could be a little better, but what are your thoughts here on Jansen? Because I feel like there's better days ahead.
Better days ahead, yes. Because I think from a true talent standpoint, Danny Jansen's a top 10 catcher. The kind of the somewhat fortunate part is Alejandro Kirk, who I don't think is on this list, but he's been terrible as well. So they're still kind of splitting. If Alejandro Kirk took off, like, Jansen would be very much at risk of playing like once or twice a week. That hasn't happened, fortunately, for Jansen. So I'm not really worried. I also like, what can you really do about it, especially in two catcher leagues? Like, you're not dropping him. Maybe in a one catcher league, if you've got some alternatives, I could see the case for dropping Jansen just because he does only play like 3 to 4 times a week because Kirk is there. But in a two catcher league, I'm just holding on. I think he'll turn it around and be fine.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you on that one. Let's go to another catcher here, and my boy William Contreras. 278 last year, 256 this year, 32 homers last year, only 13 this year. He's seen a massive drop in his barrel percentage, down to 8.7%, but the hard hit rate is the best of his career. So that's a little perplexing, so maybe dig in a little deeper. Ground ball rate's pretty much the same. Fly ball rate has dropped 5%.
That'd be the fly ball rate. Yeah. Yeah. Usually when I see hard contact but fewer barrels, it's
home run to fly ball dropped a ton. Yeah. And he's not pulling the ball as much, like 32% pull rate right now compared to almost 42% last year. So that's a big shift as well. But what else are you possibly seeing on Contreras?
It's mostly just the batted ball trajectory. 26% fly ball is really bad. He just needs to elevate. I say just needs to elevate more. But if there was one thing I'd rather have, you know, to for power, you have to hit it hard, hit it in the air. He's at least still hitting it hard. I'd much rather have that than the opposite way where you're hitting 50% fly balls and you're without thump. That's where I start to get concerned. So not too worried about big Willie style, maybe medium Willie style, the way he's played so far this year. But I don't know. One of your few misses, I think, so far.
Yeah, he has not been a good one on the Bubba side of things. If I have to lose it at catcher, I'll lose it at catcher. I'm cool with that, even though that's my thing. But Jonah Heim has made up for his failures, let's put it that way. A couple of, we're not going to talk Mike Trout if you're worried about Mike Trout.
Yeah, Mike Trout, I almost wanted to manually remove him from the list, but it's just because
he's always that good.
He's fine. He's fine.
Yeah. We have talked a nauseating amount about Jose Abreu. I think we're good on that one. Yep. Colton Wong is just not good anymore, period. Gene Segura might be in that camp as well. Anybody you really want to focus on, if you want to talk about those guys, go for it. Some of these guys, I just look at him, I'm like, yeah, he's old, or yeah, he's not good anymore. I just kind of have the lazy approach to it. But anybody stand out to you that you want to dig in on?
One guy who I didn't think, it's funny, one of my things, I tweeted this about Gene Segura, who does show up on this list, is you sometimes have these set and forget guys that you just keep in your lineup and they're quietly really bad. So Gene Segura is that. Starling Marte is also one who has quietly been really bad. Batting average down to 236 from 292 last year. Starling Marte is a perennial 280, 290 guy, and the power's just not existent. One home run. I'm not worried about Starling Marte. I look at the underlying skills. The strikeout rate is exactly where it's been in the past. The whiffs, exactly where it's been in the past. This is pretty much all BABIP driven, which means he's just not getting hits when he puts it in play, compared to how often he did before that. Starling Marte has one home run, like I mentioned, but on 7 barrels. So he's never been a great power hitter, but he's been kind of 15, sometimes 20 in good years when he's healthy. I think that raw power is still there. And has 11 steals. So he's still running all the time. So Starling Marte does show up on the list for batting average and power drops, but under the hood, it looks fine.
Yeah, he's interesting. The barrel rate, hard hit rate's all pretty much in line. The only thing that stands out to me is his fly ball rate's up to almost 35.5%, the highest of his career. That was up from 27% last, or 29% last year. That is a jump for him, but he had that big of a jump in fly ball rate, but his home run to fly ball is 2.6, where he's usually at least in the 12 to 13 range, if not higher.
And that's going to go up. I mean, the homers will come.
100%. So, yeah, that's the only thing that stands out is his fly ball rate, basically, that big jump. Otherwise, yeah, I think you're okay. I think you're okay with Starling Marte. So that could be a fun one.
Joey
sure.
Meneses on this number one on the list.
No power at all.
Power is we were skeptical in the power, and skeptical of a lot because he came out of nowhere, but then had some dongs in the World Baseball Classic, and we were all thought, well, maybe he is legit, but man, 2 home runs. Not great.
Well, maybe he returns after his paternity loss. Baby, yeah. I was gonna say he's got the baby swag coming his way. So that could be a whole new Joey Meneses coming at you. Because the crazy thing is he's hitting for average, and he's really hit well in the last couple weeks. Just no power. He had three doubles the other day. He went 4 for 5 with 3 doubles. He's hitting very well, just zero power. It's really bizarre, actually, the way you look at Joey's season so far.
Zero power and the Nationals, man. This is something they're
horrible.
We have to keep team context in here. 16 runs and 22 RBI is also not getting it done. Not his fault a lot of the times, but that lineup's rough.
It's very rough, and it I hate to break it to you guys, Captain Obvious ain't gonna get any better. So pretty rough one there in Washington. Let's talk a couple more listener questions here. We'll start with your buddy, Oregon Ducks 2. I have three players on the red list, which I'll leave it up for now, and one on the green list. Wish it was the other way around. I wish you would have told us which ones. That would have been more fun. Yeah. Right, which ones are they on the red list? Probably Jose Abreu. That's where everybody's sitting right now. But are you still on the camp? I can't remember what we decided on. I'm a drop on Abreu. Are you a drop on Abreu now in 12-team leagues or less?
God, it's so bad. It's so bad. Like, that's one of my bigger L's, I think. And
you were not alone. That was one of the most popular.
I thought last year's power outage was a fluke.
Yeah.
This does look like a pretty like legit decline. I mean, the guy has not hit a homer. We're like approaching a calendar year at this point. It's rough. So I actually have Abreu on my main event team, putting my money where my mouth was, and to see 219 with no homers. Like, I'm still starting him, but I probably shouldn't be. I'm not dropping him in 15s, but in a 12, I absolutely would. There's just nothing there right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. Lil Book of Calm has another fun one for us. He says, I'm surprised that Austin Riley, Carlos Correa, and Alex Bregman all missed the red list paced. And here's their paces out of 600 plate appearances. Riley goes from 273 last year to 239, 38 home runs to 22. So we'll go one by one. Austin Riley, every time I want to give up on him, then he hits a home run and just kind of like shuts everything right back up. The way I look at it, Austin Riley, if you look at the 600s that we're talking about, the projected 600 plate appearances for this year, he's turning into the guy that we thought he'd be after his breakout 2021. That's the way I look at it. But because everyone said he could never sustain his batting average. That was the big bugaboo with him. But the power is legit. Well, he's sustained the batting average, so the power has always been there. Obviously, if you drop the batting average like 40 to 50 points, power might disappear a little bit. So what's your thoughts on Riley? Because I'm not overly concerned. He's walking more than ever. Maybe he's being too patient at the plate, for all I know.
Yeah, I wish there was like a little feature on like FanGraphs or some site, wherever, where like, so like Austin Riley's barrel percentage in the last two seasons, 9% and 10%. This year it's 5%. And so you look at those three numbers, it's like, man, his power is down. The 9 and 10% were over 662 plate appearances in 2021 and then 693 plate appearances. Like, the font size for that 9 and 10% barrel rate should be like huge compared to the little tiny sample that we've seen so far, the 5% barrel rate. Long story to say, like, I'm not really worried at all about Austin Riley. The power is going to come back. Homer tonight off of, was it off of? No, it was off of Josh Spores. It was not off of Evaldi.
That was Acuna that hit a moonshot off of Evaldi.
Acuna and Eddie Eagle. Eddie Rosario early in the game. But
Eddie Eagle.
No, not worried. I do think, and I said this in the preseason, like, I don't think Austin Riley is a 270. Certainly not a 300 hitter that we saw in 21. I don't think he's even a 270 hitter that we saw last season, and he doesn't run. So, like, that's tough. But I think the 40 home run power is – I think he'll be fine there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Carlos Correa, 291 average last year, 201 this year, 22 homers last year, projected for 21. The power to me has never been an issue. It's just staying on the field and the rest of the goodness with him. The batting average, though, is a massive drop-off. The BABIP's down, like, 100 points from last year. That's going to obviously – obviously is the wrong word. It should change. Especially with the 12.2% barrel rate, it's just a lot of and even like his ground balls flies. It's a lot of infield flies, so go figure. But I'm not too worried about that.
No, power's still there. K rate's up a little bit, but it's fine. Batted ball trajectory is right where it's been the last few seasons. This I think is just the quintessential low BABIP early on. Batting average is going to come back, so not worried.
Yep, with you on that one. Last but not least, Alex Bregman, 259 last year, 210 this year, 23 homers last year, 16 homers this year. He had a decent day, three hits, a double, and a home run on Wednesday night. But Bregman's just one of those guys we've always talked about that enjoys the Crawford boxes. That's always been a plus for him. Barrel rate's down a bit over the last couple of years, but I've never been a big Bregman guy. So what's your, like, I think he's better than where he's at now, but I don't think he's as good as he once was. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Which could, you know, go for all of us in life. Yeah,
no, that's fair. They make country songs about that. Actually,
they do. I'm not as good as I once was, yeah. But I'm as good once as I ever was.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was pretty good. Bregman, like, the interesting thing with Bregman, he's not pulling the ball as much, which he has to do to take advantage of the Crawford boxes. A pull rate, he was a severe pull hitter, a dead pull hitter, I might add, around a 50% pull rate through, you know, at his peak. That's down 44% right now. So, like, not a huge shift, but you tack that on, I mean, that needs to be up near 50 for Bregman to be able to take advantage of the Crawford boxes. The other thing with Bregman is, like, he's just not really running anymore. I didn't know it was this bad. He has 2 steals over the last 4 seasons combined. Yeah. Am I on the right page? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 steals over the last 4 seasons combined. That's unreal.
Yeah. Down times are tough for Mr. Bregman. But hey, at least Altuve is coming back Friday. So they got that going for you.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. But that'll wrap up our listener questions. That'll wrap up our Bloom Board for the week. Any final thoughts as we sign out on another episode of Bubba and the Bloom?
No, fun stuff, man. Let's see what Mr. Liberatore goes for this weekend. Let's hope for fewer shellings and injuries on the pitcher side. Let's hope for a Brooks Koepka victory.
I'm okay with that.
To switch sports at the end here.
Yeah, I'll bring it back just real quick. I want Taj Bradley to deal on Thursday. That's all I'm going to say. I want him to deal and really shut some people down for a little bit there. We'll see.
It'll be fascinating because, the minor league results have not been there, but you can, those minor league results,
I'm not
always a grain of salt.
And I can't remember who was telling me, because I always make my sarcastic tweets and people don't all take them the right way. I was commenting on how they mess with his workload. They sent him down to be on a 5-day schedule, and now he'll be like on a 7-day schedule. So he kept pushing him back from making a start. And I'm like, you guys just totally screwed up the whole thing. You quote unquote sent him down for. And then someone that said they've been following him in AAA, they said they were working on a pitch mix change with him, and that was part of the problem. If that's the case, then it really makes sense that I'm not worried at all about Taj Bradley, because that means his stuff's still good. He's just trying to figure out how to navigate differently. Mm-hmm. So
all that stuff, like in minors, it's so hard to just look at a box score and see.
Yep, 100% with you on that one, but we'll see how it goes. We'll be back with you guys next week with more fun stuff, more boards, hopefully not as many injuries, positive news, we'll see. But we'll have it all for you. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 57. Catch you all next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select 2 or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.